9:32 Sports Central till 10 o'clock tonight. Thank you for being along for the ride. My name's Mark Harmon. He's Andy Mazur. Hope you're all hanging in there and doing the best you can during these crazy times. Kevin Kaduk is doing that. He started a newsletter, which sports fans should be reading every day. It's the Midway Minute. Kevin used to be with Yahoo, and then he's like, you know what, I'm going to do my own thing. And I think he's trying to get Ozzie Guillen's number retired as well. And he joins us now on 720 WGN. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
We are wonderful. How's it going starting a new Chicago website/newsletter in the middle of a pandemic? Nice timing by you.
Well, I started on February 10th, which was 3 months ago. So I got a month of sports, a month of spring training, a month of bad Blackhawks and Bulls basketball, and then the pandemic hit. But, you know, it's been a lot of fun. My readers every morning seem to like it. You can sign up at midwayminute.win. And, you know, the Bears have had an entire regular host of news from the draft to free agency to the schedule release. So there's been that. And with the Bulls front office, there's been plenty to write about that. So I think as we go into the summer and there's maybe some more plans to reopen or figure out how the Bears are going to stage these games this fall, it's going to be pretty interesting to follow.
And we went through the schedule, and I came up with 7-9. You boldly predict 10-6. Is that something that you really truly believe in, or?
Well, it's hard. I actually looked, and I came out with 9-7 on Thursday night, and then I looked at what everyone in the Tribune was predicting. All three or four writers were saying 9-7. Then I looked at the Athletic, and all those guys are saying 9-7. So I said, I'm one of those guys that wants to say they're going to be 16-0 every season, right? I'm that super fan. I'm that kind of idiot. So I said, okay, I'm going to get a little, optimistic here. But, 7-9, I think, obviously, is in play. I don't think they're going to be a bad team. I don't think they're going to be a great team. So when you're looking at the NFL, two or three different games go one way or the other, and that's your season. So I definitely think that they could win 7 games. I would not be surprised. They could win 10, and I wouldn't be surprised either.
One thing that you underlined was that, look, this season may or may not start on time, but if it doesn't, the games are going to be floated on the back end. I think that's an important thing to remember here. Like if it doesn't start, September the 13th, then we're going to be playing games through the end of January, and they might, and then the Super Bowl is going to get pushed back, which I think is if that actually went on, that I don't know, the Bears are having home games in January, right? I mean, if you're a season ticket holder, I would be calling up over there and say, can I get a discount on this, which I don't think the Bears are going to be offering.
Yeah, I think that would be actually kind of crazy. And what's interesting to me is that if that happens, then the Super Bowl is getting pushed back into February or March. And, if we gave up March Madness this year, I think I'd maybe take the trade. We had like March Madness weekend with the Super Bowl in the middle of it. That'd be kind of cool, right?
Think about what might be happening, though, in January, February, and March, if this continues the way it's continuing, and college basketball moves their season back, college football moves theirs. I mean, we could have, seriously, 4 or 5 different sports if the NHL picks back up and the NBA picks back up. We're talking about 6 or 7 options for that time of year.
Yeah, and you're forgetting the Masters.
And the Masters, of course, yes.
And everything, so it could be a big payoff here, but, the other thing, too, is will there be fans in the stands? You say it's going to be cold. Well, there might, the only people that might be out in the stands are the people manning the television cameras.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you did one of the things you wrote about recently was you did a great piece on John McDonough and some stuff he was doing with a young lady by the name of Cammie. Can you share about that, Kevin? It's really, really great stuff.
Yeah, so I think people are probably maybe somewhat familiar with Cammie Babiarz. She was a young girl in one of the Blackhawks ads. In 2015, she was skating with Duncan Keith. She was born with Rett syndrome, which has left her with the inability to walk or talk. And her family, her father, Bill, I went to high school with, a Driscoll Catholic, and they've been always big proponents of her and have tried to get her to live as normal of a life as possible and have a lot of experiences. And one of the things that they did in 2013 when she was 4 years old was they wanted to have her meet the Stanley Cup. And her mother, Jackie, grew up in Edison Park and had a friend who worked in the Edison Park Chamber of Commerce. And they arranged for to meet John McDonough so she could touch the Stanley Cup and get her picture with it and all that. And from there, John McDonough just sparked a really great relationship with the family. And to the point where they would come out to all sorts of games, and the Blackhawks really got behind her and started, you know, fundraising for International Rett Syndrome to kind of reverse this. It's a very rare disease that only affects 1 in 10,000 people, and John just really took to it. And I think a lot of people see John as, you know, kind of a stoic and kind of, you know, he can kind of be an intense guy, I think. I think that's maybe, you know, part of his reputation, but there's this other soft side, and he really took to Cammy and sparked a great relationship. So, you know, after his departure from the Blackhawks, there wasn't really a lot to write about because I think both sides have taken kind of a low profile, and I knew this story existed, so I wrote it, and it seems to be doing pretty well. It's kind of taken off on Facebook and Twitter, and you know, if people want to go check it out, it's right there at midwayminute.win.
Yeah, and that whole campaign that the Blackhawks did really took off, not just with Cammy, but with some other youngsters that the Blackhawks right. really wrapped their arms around. You know, I'm looking through your site, and you know, we've been talking about The Last Dance here quite a bit, and I know you have some thoughts on that as well. What have been your impressions so far?
I think it's been pretty great. I mean, I think I'm 41 years old, so I'm right there in the sweet spot. That happened when I was in high school and early years of college, and I think you guys are the same. So to relive that has been awesome. I thought this the past week when it was great with Charles Barkley and the Knicks rivalry. The one thing, I mean, I think that there's some criticism. I think that maybe that's just maybe a little too much of the myth-making, which is fine. I think we like that with Michael Jordan. You know, he's our Babe Ruth. He's our Muhammad Ali. We don't really want to tear down the heroes, but I still don't think that we maybe quite know the real Michael Jordan. This almost seems like a little bit of extension of the Nike and the Gatorade and, you know, McDonald's marketing. But at this point in time, that's all you can ask for, right? I mean, it's entertaining. Every Sunday night is like an event. It's like, you know, tuning in to watch. It's like a combination between a great sporting event and, remember when The Sopranos used to be a good thing? Everyone was tuning in on Sunday night to watch that and then dissect it afterwards. That's kind of what The Last Dance feels like to me right now.
It's funny that you say the sweet spot, like at 41, and I'm 46, and Andy's
older,
25. But right, we're all in this quote unquote sweet spot. And yeah. You know, we had Sam Smith on last week, and I'm texting and with him afterwards, and I'm basically trying to make the argument that Phil Jackson should have stayed as long as Michael wanted to play, that he owed it to him. And you know, Sam's like, well, that's what you do, right? You live your life for other people. Like, who would ever
right.
who would, so? And he's like, I appreciate the fact that you still have this romantic notion that that's how it should have ended. And I just said, like, look, for somebody who was 11 years old in 1984 when Jordan was a rookie and you lived through the whole thing, there's nothing to be other than sort of romantic about the whole era, right? Like, and I think, and like him retiring, the more I'm watching the way this is unfolding, like it created this thirst for him to come back in 95. That people were so worried they were never going to see him again, that he comes back and plays, and it just made it even bigger from there because, you know, you felt the loss of him not being around.
Yeah. The interesting thing, I think, though, is I think people feel like maybe – do you feel unfulfilled that they didn't come back in 98, 99?
Yes, I do.
I don't. For whatever reason, it almost just seems like two perfect bookends. And I know, you know, it was blown up early and they would have had a good shot at winning a shortened season because of the lockout. But I've never really felt like, oh, we really missed out on something. I don't even really mind the fact that they went 2 years in between those two three-peats. I mean, I guess it would have been kind of cool to see them win eight in a row. I mean, of course it would have been, but I also don't think that was possible, seeing how hard it was to win all of those. I mean, they made it look easy, but it also was very hard, too.
Yes.
So I don't really get the sense that they – I don't feel like I missed out on anything.
Well, being the elder statesman and having gone through a lot of disappointment in my Chicago rooting career – you can never get enough. And I think that was kind of the problem where everybody thought, hey, listen, if he's at the end of his line and he's at the end of the rope and he can't play the game anymore, all right, I get it.
Right.
But he could certainly still play at that point.
And look, if they had lost, I would have given a standing ovation as they walked off the court and cried my eyes out, and we would have known that it was officially over. And this leaves a little bit of a what if.
Yeah, that's true. You go on top, right? I guess. I don't know. I like the fact that Michael Jordan didn't lose his last series with the Bulls, right? I mean, look at what we're kind of going with the Blackhawks for the last couple of years. Hopefully, that, you know, Kane and Taves have their big send off, but. You know, it was nice to see Jordan go off at top with the Bulls. He certainly didn't with the Wizards.
And why don't we, as we're coming up against the clock here, Kevin, let's get your prediction on the Hawks as far as where they're going from here.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be interesting. Obviously, they have a young core of talent. I think that needs to step up, and obviously they really need to shore up that bottom half of the forward core. When, you know, looking at all the cup teams, the third and fourth lines were really the unsung heroes, and that's something that really hasn't existed the past couple of years. So hopefully, you know, Stan Bowman gets to work and kind of finds a few diamonds in the rough to shore up that roster and get the help that, you know, the two cores need, I guess.
Anybody want to take a guess at who's going to step into John's seat?
That's a great question. But
I mean, Stan's a candidate, yeah. I would think. Maybe they move Stan up and he hires a GM. I don't know. Jay Blunk's got to be a candidate. Pete Hasson, who's been with the organization for a long time, maybe they go outside and bring in somebody with a fresh look. I don't know.
There's something to be said about continuity. I think all the great organizations have some continuity. So if one of those two guys who you just mentioned, the three guys that you just mentioned, is up to the task and can do it, I wouldn't be averse to it.
Yeah. Kevin, great stuff, man. Congratulations on the Midway Minute. Even in the middle of a pandemic, you got it rolling. So thanks for jumping on. And by the way, thank you for pointing us in the Andrew Goldberg direction. We enjoyed having him on tonight. You had a great piece on him as well.
He's a great guy. He's really interesting. I like his quest. But thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin. 386 tickets to go.
And, who would have thunk, huh?
And by the way, I'm getting some Twitter action here, Andy Mazur. Somebody is sending our guy Andrew Goldberg a ticket from the Cubs-White Sox game at Wrigley, Thursday, April 7th, 1994, 3:05 first pitch. Guess how much a bleacher ticket was that day?
Probably like $5.
$6. Yeah. $6 to go.
And a hit against Dave Otto.
He had the double off Dave Otto. Can you name the other hit he had?
Was it Chuck Krim?
It was Chuck Krim.
Yeah, Chuck Krim. Why do I know these things, Carm?
I feel like that one might be because we've spent a lot of time together the last couple of years.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Chuck Krim, man. He had a nasty curveball.
Yes, he did.
But he,
number 32, right?
Now that is impressive. Yeah. Chuck, what was Otto's number?
53.
Wow. Sean Dunstan?
12.
Let me give you Thad Bosley?
28, I believe.
27.